robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're hunting for that last egg, that last pesky egg that you know is out there somewhere. You know it's going to start smelling if you don't find it. So you're up. Now you need us in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free, thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those patrons, they are our lifeblood. Without them, we would shrivel and die. But with them, we soar like eagles. Thank you, patrons, for supporting this show, for being the wind beneath our wings. Those patrons, in exchange, get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bunch of bonus content. Oh my gosh, the shows you get as a patron, including Feeling This, new season on the way, I'm told. Alex Solman, Christian Spicer working on the new season of Feeling This. You already got three in the chamber waiting for you. Plus, the real treat of the week, the Wednesday paid DLC program exclusive to patrons. You might have a real reason to listen to it this week. It may even be a little redundant, but that's okay. It's awesome. It's always fun, and the patrons love it. You can become one at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who's all in on the Rockets. Or the Lakers, you know, one of them, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. Rockets Warriors playing another playoff series yet again, which means, Mr. Cannata, we got to get our friendly wager on. Game as we are recording, game one is being played right now. I believe it is halftime of game one, but I'm
47-34 at half right now.
I'm focused on this. We need our friendly wager.
Yes, I'm also focused on this. Yes, I mean, I don't know what the score is. What's the stakes, dude? What are we wagering?
I got an idea.
What's that?
How about this? I'm trying to think. If the Warriors win, I will cold cookie it.
And I like it. Well, what do I got to do?
If the Rockets win... What's a dessert that I want to get you to try? I'll think of some. I feel like you like all desserts, so I'm not really like pushing you too far.
It's true,
here, but yeah. These are friendly wagers. Or maybe we can see. You can't mail me cold cookies. I'm trying to think of like a dessert trade, right? Like either way, we win. You know, like I have to make you cookies, and I send you cookies. Yeah. You have to make me cookies.
Oh, poor baby has
send
to eat cookies. A delicious cookie that's made in the most delicious way cookies ever been made.
But that, you know, so maybe we do a cookie exchange. The winner.
I
receives
think it be,
cookies from the loser.
I like cookie exchange. I like this. I think it should be accompanied by some sort of monologue on the episode after the series ends. Some sort of contrite monologue praising the other individual.
So just like that? Basically you every show then.
if you think I'm praising you now, then I have very little work to do. Anyway, we'll talk more about this. We got a big show. It's not a sports show, but it's fun when, you know, our favorite teams of cities we used to live in are facing off in the playoffs. It's always fun. Go Warriors. But we have a lot to talk about. We got Nintendo's. We got the
Nintendo
Worlds.
Day again.
it's Nintendo Day again. but we got tons to talk about. We got games we've been playing, and ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you recall that just, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I think it was, we had a real emergency where the guest we had scheduled was not able to make it. And luckily, our friend Khalif Adams swooped in and helped us out. And I said at that time, you know, we've been doing this show for almost 600 episodes. We're episode 595 this week.
I think we're 96. Episodes. I think we're 96.
Oh, is it 96?
I think it's 96.
Disagreement starting already.
It is. It's 596. 596.
All right. All right. 596. And we'd only had that happen like once, maybe twice before in the history of the 11 years we've been doing the show. Which, of course, is me jinxing it hard. Because here we are a couple of weeks later, and it happened again, this time due to weather. The first time was a medical emergency. Different people, by the way. Different scheduled guests. Yet again, we found ourselves in a pickle where it was, I heard maybe about 40 minutes before we were supposed to record that our guest was unable to make it due to severe weather in their area.
The Easter Bunny tore their ACL is what happened. And
yeah. Yeah.
Couldn't make it.
I think it was a WrestleMania related injury. Kind. Anyway, no, it was a weather, and we're wishing them well, and they get through this weather. We won't name names, but they have said they would be happy to reschedule and be on in subsequent weeks. But once again, we were stuck, and I said, well, what are we going to do? And then lo and behold, like an angel descending from the heavens, like a bunny emerging from her hole, and presenting to us a veritable bounty of colored eggs and chocolates. Lana Bashinsky is here. You know the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, because we're lucky, DLC stands for downlanable content.
Oh, my God. Every time I go somewhere, like, oh, there comes Lana Bashinsky crawling out of her hole. And so I, you know, it feels really resonant.
I wanted you to feel welcome and feel the level of appreciation we have for you jumping in at the last minute.
The kind of comfort I feel knowing you see me for me in the hole that I normally live in. I also will say that I'm so used to like the Wednesday show where, you know, we play like the opening theme, but yeah, it's just the theme. And we sort of sit, we have a little sip, we do a little dance maybe.
Yeah.
You coming in with the normal intro, guttural roar, gave me a jump scare on this side. I was like, oh my God, Jesus. Sorry. Yeah.
Lana,
I forgot what happens on the Sunday show. But we're here, baby. We're here.
We hit a new record as to how fast she realized she'd make a terrible mistake in saying, yes, I will do it. So
happy
delighted
to
have you.
Happy to be here.
You're the very best, and you give so much of your time. Lana, every single week with us on Paid DLC. If you are not a patron, you're missing out on some of the most fun I have every single week. That's for sure.
If you want to know exactly how young I am, hit up the Wednesday show, and you will know quickly. Very youthful. Very youthful.
It's more of a contrast thing than any sort of absolute youth. It's more of a... By contrast to these old fogies.
It's a curve. Yeah.
It's a
Hey, Laura. Laura, what are you doing today?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we appreciate you jumping in last minute. Lana was literally like eating dinner, and I texted her and I said, get over here, like Scorpion from Metal.
Easter Mortal dinner Kombat. With her whole family. Lana said, yeah, can I do this? And her mom said, if you step away from this table right now, young lady, because Lana's in high school, for those who don't know, yeah, you're going to be kicked out of this family. And Lana really had this like, moment.
Like, it's a chosen family. DLC.
That's right.
Let's go.
That's right.
Oh, boop, boop, boop.
Anyway, we'll try to
show
the shenanigans.
Thanks
the
for,
shenanigans. The problem is
the shenanigans eke in. It feels so right. So quickly. It feels like Wednesday, and it's like, well, let me tell you, I was making a bolognese, and you hit me any earlier than this, it wouldn't have happened, baby. It wouldn't have happened. That thing's got to reduce. But we're here.
That's the problem is that we're used. This dynamic is built for shenanigans, and we're supposed to be doing the real show this week, now, not the shenanigans show on Wednesday yet. I fear there'll be shenanigans throughout, but whatever the case, we're here and we're going to rock because we got big news. We got big games to talk about, so let's get into it. Start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's also where you can send any correspondence you'd like us to read. We love getting emails from you at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Don't hesitate. Let us know how you're feeling, what you're up to, what's going down. You can also visit our Discord and do that, where other listeners of the show are hanging out, talking about all kinds of cool topics. Check it out. 5x5 DLC on Discord is where you find it. But Lana, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I am very intensely torn. So torn that I want to pull one of you guys. I forget which one of you does it all the time. And I want to kind of like talk about two Star Wars related stories as a part of my story of the week. Because there's two characters I really love, and I'll talk more about it in my my parting gift a little later. A little spoilies there. But Star Wars Outlaws, A Pirate's Fortune was announced featuring Hondo Ohnaka.
Yeah. Who,
if you are a Clone Wars or Bad Batch fan, prominently featured. That sort of expansion, what is it? A DLC was announced for the Star Wars Outlaws. Very exciting. Love Hondo. Sounds like the same voice actor. And also Star Wars Zero Company was unveiled at the Star Wars Celebration in Japan. And it is also claiming to feature Bad Batch characters, which I think is a deeply unsung Star Wars franchise. And so both of those sort of pieces coming together, really exciting game sort of updates from both. What Star Wars Zero Company, I think as a game overall, I'm more excited about, but two big Star Wars updates along with, video game updates that I'm very eager to check out.
Yeah. The big Star Wars celebration, as you mentioned, in Japan happening as we speak, or happened over the weekend. And I think is continuing there. And, lots of big Star Wars news, and video games is playing a big part in that, you know, pan media extravaganza. Let's start with the one you started with. Let's start with this Star Wars Outlaws DLC story pack called The Pirate's Fortune. I really enjoyed the trailer for this. As you said, Hondo, not just, it seems from what they showed in the trailer, not just making an appearance, but like the centerpiece of this story. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's really circulating around that character's, the titular pirate in Pirate's Fortune here. And it looks like a lot of fun. I mean, it looks very, there's like comedic moments in the trailer. It looks like it's very, lighthearted in a sense. And, you know, you're going after this big treasure. Did you play through, Star Wars Outlaws? I know Christian came to it late and really loved it, but I don't recall if you, played through that game.
I sure did. I forget if I think we talked about it at some point on a Wednesday, probably pretty lightly, but I know that there was a bunch of early Outlaw stuff that made it very challenging to play. I think I came to it late enough that I kind of, all of the quality of life updates came into the game, and I really enjoyed playing it. There's definitely like some buggy things still, or like random slight bit of jank, but overall, I think the thematic of the world, that kind of smuggler culture heist stuff, is just, that's catnip to me. I love that in books. I love that in movies. I love it in games. I just, it's such a delicious little bit of narrative device that I like in my content and my media. And so even all those things as they were, imperfect as they were, I really enjoyed the experience. And I would be eager to go back in and try some more out, especially with Hondo. If they can nail the writing of that, I mean, that voice actor is just so killer. The character is like a little bit silly, but still like generally has cool things that they're about. And so I think it is really ripe for a really fun experience.
Yeah, there's a fun line in the trailer where he's like, I'm between crews at the moment. Yeah. It really does look like a fun personality rich experience. I think even more than the way they presented you know, Star Wars Outlaws itself, which, you know, still was, you know, not a dark game by any stretch, but it feels like this is even lighter than the main game ever was positioned, which I'm in favor of. I think that's a great angle to take here. Christian, I know you were a huge Outlaws fan, eventually, right? Came to it after the, as Lana pointed out, after the quality of life improvements as well. But I'm curious if you're into this DLC pack. Are you going to revisit this game when A Pirate's Fortune hits, which is very soon, right? This is coming out in May, I think.
Yeah, it is very soon. I will revisit this game when the season pass goes on sale again, maybe next Steam sale. But I like this approach they're taking, because the first pack that came out was with Lando. And so it's like giving you this tease of, you know, known Star Wars characters, but still not Luke or Leia or, you know, something like that. So I think this approach they're taking to both Lando in the first DLC and now Hondo in this one suits the game really well, because I think the game did such a wonderful job of existing outside of Jedi and just kind of being this lived in world. I think the thing that Star Wars Outlaws does best is just the feeling of being in an actual place. You know, it feels like you walk into a cantina and there are people there actually conversing, actually going about their business, stormtroopers actually between shifts or like doing shift changes or complaining about the day to day. And the way the world is built with the NPCs feels rich and lived in. I loved that about it. And so I think that this, you know, go on one other big heist also with, oh gosh, what's the protagonist's name? Told you her name just flew out of my head.
Kel? What's her name?
Cal is Jedi Outlaws. Cal Kestis.
This is Outlaws. Jedi Survivor.
Yeah.
Jedi Survivors. Yeah.
I can't remember.
Me either. But she's great. And I like
K-Vess.
K-Vess.
So different. Cal, K. Okay. I love her, it seems from this trailer, being confident in her role as kind of the leader of her crew. You know, it's like, yeah, you put this thing together, Outlaws, the game of Outlaws has happened. It seems like this is post-game content. I love that. And I, you know, I'm very excited to revisit this. I know it will go on sale and I will 100% play it then. Kind of like I did Outlaws. Outlaws I picked up on sale also, because when it launched on Steam, is when I jumped in. So we're certainly not hurting for things to play right now, you know?
Boy, that's for sure. Speaking of Star Wars, though, as you mentioned, Lana, that wasn't even the biggest Star Wars video game announcement. We know a game that has been talked about a little bit, hinted about, but now we know for sure that Bitreactor's first Star Wars game is going to be called Star Wars Zero Company. This had a cinematic trailer reveal at Star Wars Celebration. And I love the tone of this trailer. It positioning it as, hey, wars, right? Star Wars. They happen. There's big heroes, big moments. There's stuff that's going to be put in the history books that you're going to hear about, these big names, these big battles, these big moments. But guess what? There's a whole other layer to the war that's happening below the surface with a bunch of anonymous people that you never hear about but are super impactful. That's who this game is about. Really cool concept, just positioning that in the Star Wars universe as this sort of, you know, this discreet, covert war that's happening that you get to control with a bunch of, you know, characters that you'll invent. It's not going to be, you know, your squad isn't going to be built out of, you know, as you said, Luke's and Leia's and Han's and whatever. It's going to be these sort of anonymous foot soldiers of the war, but that are super impactful because they're doing this covert stuff. I just thought that was such a great place to position this as feeling like it has its own identity. It isn't something we've seen over and over. It really feels fresh and interesting. And of course, you know, the game itself, I think, you know, as people are calling it Star Wars XCOM, right, which is this tactical turn-based version of Star Wars, also has me super excited because I love those kinds of games. I love strategic tactical action games like that. And man, I'm just super excited for this one. Full you know, full disclosure, friend of the show, friend of all three of us, Danish Syed, who, you know, frequent contributor here, and our buddy, is the art director on Star Wars Zero Company. So we're rooting for him and this game. But I think what they showed at Star Wars Celebration, Lana, really got me super excited.
Oh, I'm super jazzed, especially because, you know, I never played XCOM, but I did play Midnight Suns, which we've talked at length about on this show. And the fact that it's all custom characters feels like I take away all of the fear of having to, like, get RSIs from skipping dialogue that I already know about. And seems like I can probably just get to the good stuff, which is, like, cool combat. I love that it talks about featuring the Lucasfilm claims that the map in Zero Company is the biggest map ever seen in a Star Wars game. So it seems like it is going to be so much more focused on this tactics and the overall immersion into this world versus, you know, looking at somebody else be really cool, even if I'm playing as that character.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm really excited about you mentioned is the fact that it is in the Clone Wars. So other than the excellent animated series, does so much to show about why that era is cool. But everybody hears Clone Wars and they go back to episode 1, 2, 3, when it's funny that that sort of era that brought out the Clone Wars is also the era that gives it the worst rap possible. But because of that sort of thing that it's more notorious for, I'm really excited for another lever that people can crank to get them into this era of Star Wars and see what makes the Clone Wars sort of time in Star Wars history a really, really cool time in that space. So I'm really, really, really excited about it.
Yeah, it looks awesome. Christian, Zero Company looks rad to me. What did you think of the trailer?
Yeah, I don't want to try to suss too much out of the trailer necessarily because it's a 2026 game. So it's still, you know, for all I know, it's December 31st, 2026, right? Like they're still, it's still cooking. But when they showed actual, what looked like actual gameplay footage, the trailer, I believe, starts with like in-game engine footage. Not all, not everything you see here will actually be in the game. Like it's a trailer, but they're saying they're using the engine. But then towards the end, it looks like you kind of see the actual gameplay. Now, it looks to me like you see it being very Star Wars-y in the sense that droids aren't taking cover behind boxes because battle droids don't take cover, right? And like droidicas would have their own cover. And so I think it just from that little snippet, it looks like they're leaning into what makes Star Wars unique for the XCOM style game. And if that pays off and holds true, and the Fett like character with her jetpack, you know, how does that change how they approach a combat? Can you hover over somebody and take someone out from behind? Or, you know, would a Jedi take cover? I mean, I guess Jedis hide sometimes, but they can also just like
deflect,
lightsaber away a million, you know, laser blasts. So I'm really curious to see how all of that plays out in the game. And then they also did talk about in the harder difficulty modes, having the permadeath and all of that stuff that, you know, I remember way back when, I think it was on We Can Confirm, Jeff, we talked like with Garnet about how often you and Garnet died.
Yeah.
As you were XCOMing with each other. Yeah. And I think there's a chance for there to be really cool, you know, emergent gameplay in this game, and that it is Star Wars, I think will make it feel more special for people because you connect with the franchise in a way that, not that XCOM is B tier, but Star Wars is Star Wars.
Right.
So if you do something cool with your Jedi and you get through by the skin of your teeth, I think that's going to stick with people in a big way. I think that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, the player stories. Sorry to cut in, Jeff.
No,
the,
go ahead.
Even in the cinematic piece, those little attention to detail, the fact that they showed a clone trooper with like the custom paint job, which is super evocative of, again, the Clone Wars and the Bad Batch, which is, it's just such a significant thing being like, yeah, it's a clone, but they've got this personality and it can be the personality that you ascribe to them or whatever. It's cool little deets, cool little deets.
Yeah, evidently the headquarters that you'll be, I assume, upgrading and going back to from each mission is this place called The Den, which was seen in Rogue One. So, like, this is deeply immersed in stuff that we've seen, even if they're also going to be introducing their own custom characters that they've invented for the game, and you're able to, you know, have your own squad of people that you'll name and you'll You know, I wonder if they'll let you create a Star Wars character named like Harvey, you know, or like Jill, you know. I don't know. Or if they're like, you know, it's got to be Bobat Schloomdanger or what, you know, whatever, you know. It's got to be a Star Wars name.
You can make your character's names the same way that you can write notes in Elden Ring. We give you a bunch of just right. words, yeah. syllables, you put them together.
I love that.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right, so that's Star Wars news out of Star Wars Celebration, some cool video game stuff. But Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
The biggest story of the week, that by the time we record next week's episode, might not be a story for me personally anymore, or it might continue to be my biggest story of the week, is that for U.S. retailers, aside from the Nintendo Direct version where they're sending their email, I believe it's on May 8th, if you were one of the lucky chosen ones to get the Nintendo golden ticket and be able to purchase straight from them. But for U.S. retailers, Best Buy, Walmart, Target, the like, whatever, we have a pre-order date, ladies and gentlemen. We have a pre-order date, April 24th. So that is, like I said, between now and next week's episode of this show, pre-orders will go up for, I believe it is Target and Walmart, I think, have both confirmed as far as I know. And I think, I don't know if Best Buy is confirmed, but it's nine.
Best Buy and GameSpot have both confirmed as well, as far as I know, because I got an email from Best Buy going, hey, and I was like, yeah, let me know. I'll definitely be refreshing and not getting one, I'm sure.
It's 9 p.m. Eastern for Target and Walmart, and I think Best Buy as well. And I think GameStop said it's 11 a.m. day of on the 24th. And then when stores open, if you want to do that. But double check me online, dear listener. Don't, you know, pin your pre-order chances to what I say here. But the other side of this news is that Nintendo is, I guess, swallowing the tariff. And it is launching for, it feels weird to be like, the low price of. But the Switch 2 is launching for the same price that it was originally announced at. Comma, at least for now. And so my question to you, Jeff, is does this turn what would have been an easier to get pre-order, because Nintendo apparently says they have been stocking up on stock, into a, well, I better spend $500 now because next month it might be $750.
I mean, the price of PlayStation 5 went up, right? So it's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, I think these things are going to be hard to get anyway. It seems that, you know, the global economic crisis isn't going to help that. But I feel like it was always going to be hard to get one on June 4th anyway.
Fifth.
Why do I keep doing that? I keep doing that. I don't know why. Anyway, I think it was going to be hard either way. And I think it's still going to be hard. You know, you said they're swallowing the price hit. Well, not
on the console.
True.
Yeah.
They're pushing some of that to the accessories and the other stuff. It's like, hey, no. The console is still the price we said. But like, if you want an AC adapter, that's going to be more. the controllers have gone up in price. Not a ton, $5. But, you know, everything went up $5. So the camera, the straps, the Joy-Con straps, the AC adapter, everything went up a little bit from a peripheral add-on perspective, which I guess is the best case scenario here, right? I think that's more than I would have hoped for a week ago. I wouldn't have thought that we would be able to see this price stay set based on this craziness. But, you know, tariffs right now have been delayed for 90 days and it's all just big question marks. So who knows? But yeah, I think this April 24th date in America is going to be a real scrum to get these.
I'm wondering, so one of the things that on the Wednesday episode, Christian, you were away for it, but at the time, I mean, I didn't do any research into things. We were kind of giggling about the leaderboards for your time spent online is your eligibility to the pre-order in. Yeah. And then Christian, you pointed out later via text, I think you were just like, I think that's just to stop scalpers, which I do think is, if that is actually a successful system, do we think that that actually balances out your ability to get one if it is tied in with this leaderboard thing?
It's all gone now.
Is it gone now? No.
That's not. That's the Nintendo Direct purchase. So Nintendo is selling
it
some
from them.
Yeah. Oh. From them, and they had this criteria, but it was also. I mean, yeah, you guys got a lot of stuff wrong on that Windows show. It's fine.
We were literally recording it like minutes after they talked, so we were. But the point is, I think that was going to happen before retailers were going to have their pre-sale date in America.
No, it was the other way around. That was always later because they announced the pre-sale date and then they canceled it. The pre-sale date was supposed to be a week after the announcement.
Well, it doesn't matter. All of it, it's moot now. So we don't need to get into it.
No, Nintendo's still doing theirs, but now it's still on May 8th. So if you don't get this from Best Buy or whatever, then you have to just hope that Nintendo chooses you and you meet their requirements. I'm not going to sit here and say they're not annoying, but they're not that strict, all things considered. Mm. And it's something that Sony has done before as well, if you were going to buy whatever it was directly from them right at first launch also. I do think it is this delicate balance of how do we let it get to the fans and not just to scalpers. I know bands are trying to do it with concerts. It's like everything is just...
Well,
harder.
I think bands and concerts is a slightly different animal because you're supply constrained. And I would think for a console that's been in the works this long, there shouldn't be supply constraints. I get we've gone through a global pandemic in the interim there and think, you know, hard to get silicon in certain ways. Yes. But like, just make more of them, Nintendo, before you release it. It bums me out that it has to be this way because Apple's figured it out, right?
But isn't that part of the psychological, you know, the scarcity. I just want to be part of the thing that people are talking about. I want it so bad. Doesn't it sort of there's a balance there where you go too far, nobody has one and everybody's mad at you. But if you have like the right line, you know, 50% of your friends end up getting one and you just sit there with the FOMO, I feel like that's a factor that it could be a driving mechanism for these purchases.
Maybe. I don't know. There's certainly people that know more about this than I do, but I find myself a little skeptical on that stuff because it feels like, why wouldn't a company want to sell as many of them as they can? Like, why would you want to create a demand that you can't fill? I don't know. But maybe it's
inventory costs. You lose money for everything that you have sitting in a warehouse that you're not selling. So there is that line of,
yeah,
what's that exact razor's edge? And I think they maybe will err on the side of being under and then spooling up assembly lines, you know, or whether manufacturing lines, and how many other devices is this thing making? And you're slotting in between this holiday and that holiday, and you know,
I get it. It's hard, and you know, comparing it to Apple isn't perhaps fair because you know it's a $3 trillion, or at least it was before, you know, this crazy roller coaster ride of tariffs has happened. But at one point, Apple was a $3 trillion company, so it's kind of like comparing everybody to Goliath. But I do think. It does occur to me that there was a time when you couldn't get an iPhone at launch, or it was a pain to get one, and now it's just easy. It just happens. And
but is that because there are that many more iPhones being made, or is that because there is some amount of, you know, Apple still iPhone still being the biggest one, but there's more competition? I don't think everybody feels the need to get an iPhone 2.
Perhaps. I think that's partly that's an annual release, so not everybody is trying to get it. This next one because my 16 is still fine, or you know, I upgraded in September and I'll get this next one and whatever. And this is
the point,
like,
is that they meet demand, right? And these other, you know, these console manufacturers don't. And you know, I'm sure there's more complicated factors at play that I'm ignoring, but it's just a bummer that we have to play this game. And
it's the first game you get to play on your Switch too, Jeff.
Are you guys going to be attempting to get one on April 24th, this Thursday?
Yeah, big yes. I mean, no, dear listener, I'm not, and neither should you.
Len, is your household getting one or trying to get one?
I think that's a really good question. I think Jeff and I go back and forth on it. And I also think both of us look at each other and be like, What if I say no, but then I do it so that I can give it to you and be such a good partner? What if we lie to each other?
Adorable.
What about you, Mr. Kanata?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get one. I suspect it's going to be harder than I want it to be, but I'm going to try. I'll try.
I'm so stoked. I think this launch lineup is pretty terrible, to be perfectly honest. Like games available on launch day, except for the next story I think we'll talk about. I mean, the pack-in game is the reason. And then July is Bonanza and then Metroid at some point. So I'm super stoked on the console, but all I really care about is Mario Kart.
All I care about is the Nintendo console tour. Can't wait to purchase that.
Dude.
Can't wait to purchase the demo.
Let's see what this thing can do from the inside. Christian mentioned it. It's down to me to have really the biggest news story of the week, which is the other Direct that Nintendo had. Not the Switch 2 Direct, but the follow-up Mario Kart World Direct focused entirely on the game. A scintillating 16 minutes of nonstop Mario Kart World.
You guys are bringing the snark again.
I didn't do anything.
The inside tour that you buy, that you download.
That deserves snark.
Come on.
How dare you? That
you can't tell me that that's not a ridiculous product. They want to
Astrobot's Playroom. I think that the game that is the advertisement for the console, it's like a little bit silly. It's not bad. People made that game. They probably put lots of effort into the mini games. Like it's not that it's not worth it, but it is, I think, like a little bit self-inflating.
It's a tech demo that they're charging you for. It's ridiculous. The idea that you would think we can't say that's ridiculous is also ridiculous.
I also want to underscore, because I think I've been bad at the balance between like general sass levels, which is my default state. I feel like if I have the opportunity to bring it, I will bring it. I am very excited for the Switch 2. I'm going to play the hell out of that thing. I cannot wait for many. I don't even know what the games are, but the form factor of it, I just love. The magnet thing just looks like a great upgrade to something that feels like a very breakable piece right now. And just, I love my current Switch. I will definitely be getting the Switch 2 at some point in the future. So I'll underscore any sass I have. I wouldn't bring the sass if I didn't love it. If I weren't passionate about it, I wouldn't be sassing up on it.
Well, let's talk about Mario Kart World. But first, let's take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back after these messages. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace! Squarespace! The place for you not only to build your website, but get the domain that you want for your website, because Squarespace has the tools that you need. It is an all-in-one website platform that is designed to help you stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or you're scaling your business, Squarespace gives you everything you need to claim your domain, showcase your offerings with a professional website, grow your brand, and get paid all in one place. We talked, Christian, a number of times about the fact that the only reason DLCpod.com exists, the only reason ChristianSpicer.com exists, the only reason JeffKanata.com exists, is because we were able to do it with Squarespace. But I think even more than that, purchasing our domains is where that's where we went, because they have the coolest front end for buying a domain. Before we even got to the building of the website part, just buying the domain, that's the only place I go at this point to buy domains, is squarespace.com.
Anything that takes the friction out of what I'm trying to do is a win. And Squarespace, from start to end, eliminate so much friction. It's like, oh, I should have a website. Ah, it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of time. I don't even know how to do that. Oh, it's going to never. And then you're like, no, squarespace.com, get started, be done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very direct through line. You have a great looking website on a domain that you're happy with, that you're setting up whatever it needs to be, dlcpod.com, like you said, whatever it needs to be. Done, done, done. Get it off your checklist. Move on with your life. It looks great. It's easy.
That's done. Right. Squarespace domains, there's no hidden fees, no add-ons required, Every Squarespace domain comes with advanced privacy and security tools included to ensure your domain remains online and protected. Plus, Squarespace provides everything you need to bring more of your dream to life, whether that means building a website or adding a professional email service. Don't wait to claim your name. Invest in your dream domain today. And of course, we've talked about how when you're building your website, you've got their cutting-edge design, their collection of these design tools, wherein anyone can build a bespoke online presence that perfectly fits their brand or their business. Because you start with their Blueprint AI, which is Squarespace's AI-enhanced website builder. It gives you a fully custom website in just a few steps, using basic information about your industry, your goals, your personality, to generate premium quality content and personalized design recommendations. And Squarespace also offers a complete library of professionally designed and award-winning website templates with options for every use and category. So no matter where you start, your website is flexible to what you need with intuitive drag-and-drop editing, beautiful styling options, unrivaled visual design effects, on-brand AI content, and more ways to list what you offer with no experience required. Truly, you don't have to know how to build a website to build a website with Squarespace, because their tools are so strong. And then once you've got the website, their advanced and integrated Squarespace SEO tools means that every website on Squarespace is optimized to be indexed with meta descriptions and auto-generated sitemap and more, so that you show up more often on search engines and bring in more of your ideal customers. Don't take our word for it. Check it out for yourself. You can build a website completely for free on Squarespace. You can use all those tools. You don't even have to give them a credit card. All you got to do is go to squarespace.com/DLC. You get a free trial. Then when you're ready to launch, use our promo code, which is DLC. You'll save yourself 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Again, squarespace.com/DLC, promo code DLC. It lets them know you heard it here, and it gives you 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. If you're just getting domains, if you're just stocking up for the future, you can still save yourself 10% by using our promo code DLC. Check it out. Squarespace.com/DLC. All right. So the Mario Kart World Direct, I don't know. It needed its own 1 week later, 16 more minutes. Why? I don't know why we couldn't have just gotten all that on the day. I don't think that's snarky of me to say. I think that's a legitimate critique to say, kind of weird to like wait. And then what we got wasn't a ton more information. It was pretty redundant to what we already knew. We got some cool new tidbits and a lot of extra in-game footage, which I think Mario Kart World looks really good. I mean, it just looks incredibly good. And I'm not even a Mario Kart person and saying that, but I've played enough with my son at this point where I feel like, man, this really is reinventing those particular wheels and maybe even putting some skis on this time or boat parts. I don't know. But it looks awesome. And the idea of it being this big open world where you can just sort of hang out and go between tracks and all, you know, they showed a number of new tracks, which look cool. They showed the fact that there's going to be a day and night cycle. They showed the different modes that are going to be available. They showed new items, a new freezy flower item, which looks cool. They showed the ability to jump that you now have at any point, which is cool, which is going to lead to a lot of, you know, finding things off the course and shortcuts and all kinds of cool stuff. They showed multiplayer, local multiplayer, attaching multiple Switch 2s up to do a local LAN kind of daily support you can do over Wi-Fi. They showed a game chat. So they really showed all the aspects of the game that we kind of knew, but filled in some gaps as well. these new outfits that you can get just by purchasing things at their in-game stores. I think the coolest feature is the jump, the charge jump, I think is really cool. And this rewind, which, you know, we've seen in lots of other games in the past, other racing games have had rewind. But the fact that this will not pause any race you're in will cause you to fall behind if you want to use rewind, but it's there for you to use it. And they specifically called out the fact that it's there for you to use it when you're just kind of exploring and trying to find the cool way to get to this location that looks difficult to get to. You can keep trying it and rewinding it. I love that. So, you know, there's a lot to like. Lana, what was your takeaway from the Mario Kart World Direct?
I think the world looks stunning. There's so many different, very joyful, very fun. I mean, Mario Kart never sort of struggles to find extreme appeal, but like doing little edge grinds on the cart, that looks like a joyful little moment. It almost feels like, you know, a Super Mario World, as my nephew say, walk around Mario game. Merged with this car game and the ability to, like, you're going and navigating and there's little platforming challenges, possibly of these different things you're trying to do throughout the world. That has me really intrigued. But the thing that really does stick to me as what feels to me like the critical thing that sort of possibly fixes the one reason why I'm not really a Mario Kart person. I'll play it. I want to check out all the different maps and it'll be fun. But that charge jump, baby. This can be used to latch onto a wall, briefly wall run, dodge items, and find shortcuts. Like, the thing about Mario Kart that always gets me is it feels like there is such a balancing effort to make it so that you are punished by going too fast beyond other people, which is a brilliant way to make it feel like anybody of any skill level can really play the game together. But when you're a gamer, okay, and you're trying to get your grind set on and really trying to win some games, it's just like, I'm not going to get one of the key drivers for my satisfaction in a game from a game that has the veneer of that being the key thing that you get from it is winning the race. This has so many things that are not winning the race that look like they could fulfill a lot of other satisfying ticks. And even within the context of the race, the charge jump to possibly be able to dodge some items and sort of express skill in the game in a way, it has me really intrigued and very eager to check it out.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that jump is going to be a huge new skill ceiling, and especially like wall riding and finding like places you're not even supposed to go that mm-hmm. might be, you know, complete new ways to approach a map. Looks really cool. Yeah.
One of the things I'm really intrigued by, and because I didn't catch the direct when it was on, and because I'm sort of here last minute, I kind of bopped through as quickly as I could the trailer, so I didn't get all the details. But I know you can free roam between one map and the next. And it's like, yeah, just free roam over there and join the race. I'm like, do you join the race in the middle of the race? Or once you hit the track, does it do the starting sequence? I'm wondering how that free roam, it feels like I cannot picture what the flow would be like to make it feel seamless versus like, you got there and there's a loading screen.
No, I suspect it's the way that, you know, Burnout Paradise did it and Forza has done it and other racing games. They didn't show it specifically, but I suspect it will be, if we're going to go to a race, then we will, the game will set everybody up and start the race in a fair way. But when you're in the free roam, you can see where all the tracks are. And one of the cool things that they showed was this notion of, we have these tracks and we have these race courses that are all in the same world, and you can define your own race to get from one to the other, or that's just, you know, the side roads that are not actual racetracks, you can define them as a sort of bespoke little race that you want to do with your friends. I think that's cool too. And I think, you know, other racing games have had stuff like that as well, other open world racing games. But yeah, I suspect that what will happen is, if we're actually going to get into a race, we all can do whatever we want to get there. But once we get there, it resets. We're all on the starting line, and then we 3-2-1 go like a regular Mario Kart would.
Yeah.
Christian, what is the stuff you saw that you plucked out of this direct that maybe added new information for you about Mario Kart World?
I think you all hit on a lot of it. I think there's going to be a new round of min-maxing that Mario Kart 8 didn't necessarily have. Like a lot of the Mario Karts, you find the secret path or the shortcut in Wario Stadium, and you either have the skill to hit that jump and make that shortcut every time, or you're six and you don't, you know? And it's like, and I'm very curious how many paths the tracks in Mario Kart World have and how advantageous they all are. Is it you got to have the skill to rail grind, to wall ride, to bounce off the piranha plant, to then land on the cloud, to then do the thing, and that is the way that you're going to race that course? Or is there going to be kind of some other risk reward to that other than, you know, the pinball style risk reward of, yes, if you do this, it is better, but it's challenging. And if you fail, then you're penalized because you get brought back to the main part of the track. I'm very curious how open-ended some of these shortcuts or some of these alternative paths are in the game. And then the other thing, Lana, you talked about, you know, the Mario Kart rubber banding, that the series, it's a hallmark of the series. I'm very curious how that plays out in the new Knockout Tour mode, because I mean, it is frustrating, sometimes frustrating in the best way, and other times just plain frustrating, to be winning a race and about to finish whatever it is, 200cc, then you get blue shelled right at the end and Koopa zooms by you and you lose by a point or whatever that is. I could imagine it could be very frustrating to be doing great at Knockout Tour and then just get steamrolled by like blue shell, red shell, green shell, banana peel, bullet bill. Yeah. And then you fall out and you can't advance anymore. Like, how long are those races? How, like, those time trials, those progressions? Because if you're trucking along and then you get Mario Karted right out of there, I could see myself and also the younger audience becoming very frustrated.
I'm wondering, like, I could see something like that where they like just have the default one, but I'm wondering if they'll have settings like Super Smash Brothers or something where you can be like, no items, no blue shells, or like pick individually. If you're setting up a race, are you setting up a lobby where like, hey, here's the features of this lobby, the way that we're playing is this many rounds, no blue shells, blah blah blah. Like, is there going to be like a lingo and a jargon to this type of sort of more combat more combat like knockout racing? Yeah, I'm really intrigued by it.
And they did also show straight up combat again,
which
I feel like they spent a little bit of time on, which hasn't necessarily been a big feature of some of the more recent Mario Karts, the balloon battle.
I love those. My son loves that. Precious memes, baby.
Yeah.
On those colorful cubes of yore.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely looks like it has everything. And, I mean, I got to say, the thing that made me the most excited was seeing, you know, races on water, races on, you know, on snow, this terrain types. And then they, you know, they show the map and it's just massive with these different, and it looks like a, you know, it looks like a map for a Zelda or a map.
It's crazy.
You know, it's just, it's huge. And it's got all these different biomes and stuff. It looks like this one is really, really a different kind of Mario Kart experience. Which looks awesome. I mean, it looks awesome.
I love the way they have this rich character library to choose from, not only just in Mario, but across all of Nintendo. You know, they've done Link DLC in the past for Mario Kart 8. They have all these characters. And I say this both with some snark and both with some sincerity. I love that the new characters are just like the cow.
It's a cow, man.
It's the cow from Moo Moo Pastures or whatever. And it's like, you know, somewhere there's like, some B-list, D-list Mario character that's just like, oh, no.
Was the penguin in Mario Kart 8? I don't know. I saw that penguin.
I don't
think
you can drive as it. Yeah, the penguin is from the ice level. What was that first ice
from
level?
From N64, that penguin in the ice level. Like,
yeah, you definitely can't drive as him in 8. I can tell you that.
You can't?
I don't believe so.
I love that penguin. It is such a silly little design. What a sassy little guy. I'm a Toad gal typically, but now you brought in Goomba and Penguin. It's like easy sell to LB.
Sorry, Hammer Brothers. You're an obstacle on the course. You will not drive the cart. Why? Cow drives cart.
Dude, that Hammer power up where you can like put obstacles, it like shoots in a rainbow arc, and you can, but they stay there for a minute, so you can put obstacles and create a almost like a fence. That's kind of a neat idea. It looks really cool. Looks really cool. And we don't have to wait long, or maybe we do, depending on availability of the system. All right. That is the stories of the week. We got games. We got games we've been playing, and we're going to get into it. We're going to take another break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with our playlist. This episode of DLC is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh. Fresh. Fresh air. Fresh sunshine. Good food. Oh, that's what spring is about. HelloFresh makes it easier to fit quick home-cooked meals into your schedule every single week by curating delicious recipes like pasta primavera, chicken Dijon, pecan-crusted trout, as well as over 100 seasonal snacks, sides, and treats. Last week, Christian Spicer, let me tell you what I had. I had citrus pork tacos from HelloFresh. I had mozzarella and herb chicken with couscous. I had mustard apricot pork filet with green beans and delicious little circular potatoes. Do you think my family would have had those kinds of succulent gourmet meals made by me if it wasn't for HelloFresh?
No, they'd be like picking for scraps. Like, oh, look, I found a chip crumb in the carpet.
Mac and cheese again, Dad? Must we? That's what they would say. I'd be like, yes, because it's all I know. It's all I know. But with HelloFresh, hey, I could be King Dad. I could be the greatest guy. I made the most delicious stuff. You know, you have any idea how well citrus pork tacos went over with my kids? They loved it.
But it probably took like 4 hours to make, at least. At least 4 hours.
No. No, no. We're talking in and out, baby. I'm not going to brag, but I've gotten pretty good at the chopping because of HelloFresh, because of doing at-home meal kits.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten pretty good at the chopping, and now I can get that thing, bad boy, on the table in like 40 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
And they have some 20-minute-er meals, too. And upcoming, you talk about what you had, one I'm looking forward to. I think this is next week when I was planning it. One-pot Mexicali black bean soup.
Ooh.
Mm. It's a 20-minute-er. It's a one-potter. It's going to be delicious.
Yeah.
And that's the other fun part about it is pre-planning and pre-gaming what those dinners are going to be. Like, I'm excited for what I'm going to have today. But then I'm also like, oh, yeah, next Thursday, though.
Oh, it's so much fun. You get on the app. You plan it out. And, hey, and – now HelloFresh even allows, if you don't have 30, 40 minutes, if you don't even have 20 minutes, they now have their new ready-made meals that offer chef-crafted, flavorful dishes that are ready in just 3 minutes. So you can, you can get outside, get work done, whatever you need, just maybe some more me time, whatever you want. And every HelloFresh meal uses high-quality ingredients, including seasonal, fresh produce, and proteins that travel from the farm to your doorstep. And flexible deliveries means that you can pause or skip whenever you need. I make use of that all the time. If I'm traveling or if it's not convenient that week, I can switch the day it arrives or skip that week. It's really great. And I got to tell you, knowing what goes into the meals that I'm feeding my children because I put it there, knowing how much salt or sugar, I don't have to worry about what they're getting at some restaurant or fast food place that because I had no other time and no other energy to do it. HelloFresh makes it easy. Step-by-step instructions. I can feel confident. I can feel good about what I'm giving my kids. Feel great yourself with meals that fit your spring schedule and make the season even more delicious. Go to HelloFresh.com/DLC50off now to get 10 free meals with a free item for life. One box with active subscription, free meals applied as discount on first box, new subscribers only, varies by plan. Again, HelloFresh.com/DLC50off, DLC 50 off to get 10 free meals with a free item for life. DLC 50 off. HelloFresh.com/DLC50off. All right. let's check out the games that we have been playing on our playlists.
Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist.
A lot of delicious overlap in the playlist this week. I'm excited about that. But Lana, maybe you want to start with something that is not an overlap.
I don't remember if I talked about it on the show, so you guys will have to let me know. This one sort of ties nicely into the other, but I finished a game recently-ish called Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. Have I chatted at all about that?
We talked about it at some point, but it doesn't matter. I would love to hear about it again. And
it's also been big on the Discord, so I know folks would love to hear. I mean, there's people are still talking about puzzling their way through that one. So I'd love so you've rolled it. You've wrapped it up.
I wrapped it up. There's some ear flicks here and there about, you know, little various gripes I have. But Lorelei and the Laser Eyes is sort of a delightful, plot-driven, I'd say fairly challenging puzzle game set in this sort of manner that you go through, and you're picking up lots of different little pages and manuscripts, and there's sort of this freaky overtone to the whole thing with sort of like little cutaways of like you only get to see somebody's shoulder and their hand while there's like little wibbly music, and it sort of has like a tension to it. It's like a little bit of a freaky element, but you play as Lorelei, who's been invited here, and you basically have to continue to solve puzzle after puzzle after puzzle, and some of them take like knowledge outside the game of how numbers, math, common numbers that you'd be like, those are famous numbers. Those numbers go together. And building evidence from around this house and making your way through the plot. It is an incredible, incredible game. Delightful little plot line. And other than some like really kind of nauseating camera work that kind of pops the camera into a different kind of corner or different static location, depending on which sort of room you're in. That can be a little bit to get used to, but just delightful, stylish little thing.
Yeah. It's called Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. I know it's gotten a lot of really positive buzz. I remember you saying how much you really have enjoyed it as well. Mm-hmm.
How hard would you say it was or is? Like, how do you difficulty the puzzles in it?
See, I think an interesting question. I've actually thought a lot about that because in general, I would say it is find number in world, put number in correct location. And that is not hard.
Yeah. That sounds like Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Like absolutely. Very basic.
But basically right away, it's not spoilers to say, right away you sort of get in there and the first kind of things you can interact with are like different books and things you have to read. And one of them is like Mr. Magoo's Book of Puzzles or something like that. And it's like 16 or 17 different puzzles that it's in like the second room. And if you get there and you do any number of those puzzles and you're like, these are so hard, I'd be like, the game's probably going to be too hard for you. And if you get through half of them and you're like, well, I don't quite understand the rest of them, you'll probably have a fine time, but it'll be quite a challenge. And if that book is easy, man, go shred through it. It's just like it's nothing feels really easy, but it's interesting that it'll go back and forth between sort of true, logic-y, not even quite math. I'd say more logic puzzles and some that are just visual puzzles. And I sort of couch co-opted it with Jeff, where, you know, just or Game & Watch with Jeff, where you'd get to one puzzle and Jeff would go, oh, I know the answer to this, blah, 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 engineer brain, these things. And then we get to another one that's just like a picture and he'd be like, I have no idea. And I'm like, oh, it's six. And he's like, how did you, what, why? And it's like, well, it's a picture of the letters, the number six. it felt like our two brains combined created a full picture, a full brain to be able to have a pretty good time with this thing. So I think early enough, generally, I think, you know, small game, small studio, taking it out for a spin and just supporting small developers that you're excited about and wanting to support that, I think is great. But if you're going to buy one game, I think that first book of puzzles and you're worried about it being too hard is so early in it that you can purchase it, try it out, sort of test yourself. And if you think that's too hard, you can pretty quickly return it. So I think that is sort of like a nice little serendipitous backstop if you're at all worried about it and you are on running a budget.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, that's Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, but it's not the only puzzle game you've been playing this week. I'm still completely addicted to Blue Prince, and it sounds like you have been playing that. Well, are you playing that with your husband, Jeff, as well? Are the two of you kind of co-oping it?
Yes, yes, we are. Yeah. It's consumed every waking thought. This is where I have to be like, oh man, I've been stuck on listening to music again. So I haven't listened to your take on Blue Prince. Usually I catch up on DLC at the gym so that by Wednesday I'm ready to listen. But all my free time has been Blue Prince.
All my notes here, my little notebook. I'm soloing it. So I wish I had a second brain to leverage sometimes. But my take on Blue Prince is what I love about it is that it doesn't feel like a puzzle game in that it doesn't hit you with dead ends that are puzzles. It doesn't say there's nothing for you to do now until you unlock this. Mm. It instead says, well, here's this fun little board game that you're playing. And if you happen to notice a few things, we're going to, you can like
do that.
work your brain on that. Mm-hmm. But there's always this other little thing to do. And I think the thing that's genius about Blue Prince is its pacing, like how it meets out information to you. And literally all you have to do to progress is keep playing. Just keep playing.
Yeah.
And you will progress. And then it will give you a little nugget of information and you'll be like, oh my God, that.
Here's the things. So Blue Prince overall, you've obviously chatted about it on the show before. I'm generally loving it. I kind of went in very intrigued, lightly skeptical, because I heard a lot of folks being like, it's like Outer Wilds. And I want to say, I don't think it's like Outer Wilds. It evokes similar things to Outer Wilds, of this sense of curiosity and this sense of exploration. And when you put something together and go, oh, I got it. I got that little thing. It's those same feelings. If you haven't played Outer Wilds, you should definitely do that. If you're listening to this and you haven't played Outer Wilds, it's a masterpiece. It's a full-on masterpiece.
Okay, I got to go then.
Period.
I'll be back. Sorry.
Right. Well, I'll see you in 2 weeks. And your life will be better for it. Blue Prince, I actually kind of have, there's like certain things about it. Overall, I love it. Certain things about it that I'm like, why would you make this choice?
Like
90% of the time, I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm so excited. I have these things. I have various options, all the different resources. I'm so curious. I think there's a little bit more that could have been done to help you achieve certain goals in a short amount of time.
You've earned credits.
The RNG is so RNG.
Yeah, I agree. And that is, I think, for me, the like only frustration point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so there. The number of times I've been so freaking close to doing what I wanted to do, but then I can't. Nothing that I did, you know?
Yeah. I feel like the positive thing is that there is such an abundance of things to do.
That's right.
But there also, you know, there are little clues and little hints throughout the world. And I feel like some of the things that I feel like are the most obvious possible thing that you can just kind of get to, it's like, but have you learned this yet? And I'm like, yeah, like 15 times. You showed me in 15 different ways this clue. Why are there so many versions of this clue? Meanwhile, this glaring obvious thing that's like, put code in here is like, where's that clue? I'm hunting everywhere for that clue. And you're telling me the same clue 10 times in a row. I will scream.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I don't know if I have the same gripe. I do think it's funny to me how many times I've like beat my head against the wall. And then like a new room comes like, and then figure it out. And then a new room comes up and then it's like, oh, it just says it.
It just tells you what it is.
It just told me what that, I spent so long trying to figure it out.
That is one of the things I think is really nice, is in the same sort of way as like Hades did, where you'd have your little fated prophecy thing And so if you don't quite get what you want and you had an intent for the type of run that you were going to do, you could be like, ah, well, I'm just going to get all new things. And then often enough, you're like, oh my gosh, I did not realize this synergy had occurred when blah, 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 because I never would have taken those normally. It really incentivizes that. Yeah. And in this game, it's like, when in doubt, have you been in that room before? You haven't? Can you afford it? You should take it. Yeah, and that is
– always take the new room. Always take the new room. Because even if the blueprint doesn't sound like it's going to be a useful room to you, there could be something in it that's literally just like – tells you the thing.
Exactly. You know? I have one other major gripe, and it is a, I'll say it, somewhat petty little gripe, but I cannot not mention it. And I will mention it in the most sideways way, no spoilies. But it's a roguelike. Your day, it goes by days. That's like the mechanic of your various runs. And very deliberately, you end your day when you feel like you've done everything. It is like such a deliberate action. You have to call it a day. And it is like, are you sure you want to call it a day? And yeah, call it a day. And that's the whole thing. It presents you with an end game. It's like, do this thing. This is your clearest first possible final objective of the game. Do this
after
thing.
After credits or before credits?
Before credits. And so when you finally do that thing, it's like it takes a couple RNG things. You could build up a bunch of resources. The game doesn't know the player state. I had a run. I had so many resources. I specifically did it in this way. I had an opportunity to sort of beeline it, and I took it. I had all these open doors, all these places to explore, so excited. And I triggered something that was, quote unquote, the end game. It gave me a slow cutscene that gave me basically no new information and ended my day for me. It evaporated all of my resources. It ended my literal day. It ended my day in the game.
She just went to sleep.
I did. I was so mad. Jeff and I both just sat there on the couch being like, no, why? Why? Why would you do this?
Game over, go to bed.
It was supposed to feel good that you did that.
This is my reward, is this little cutscene. And there's another circumstance where I would have gotten there and had no resources, had nothing else to do, and it would have been like, I did it. Like there's a
skin of my teeth.
Exactly. Yeah. There's another circumstance where I wouldn't have cared at all. But just a fair warning, if you do the thing that it proposes as the end game, it will end your day. And so do everything else.
But it's also not the end game.
Exactly. So like, yeah. But like anybody who's playing knows what I'm talking about. There's the objective that it gives you right away. Ugh, it made me be like, I'm not picking it up again. But then of course I thought about it all night and woke up at 8 a.m. and immediately started playing it for a few hours before work. So it has its hooks in me. It is an excellent game.
It's an extraordinary game, and it's cool how it's become such a big deal. Like sometimes these games, you know, you feel like you have to yell from the rooftops, like, please, please, please play this game. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this game has sort of hit the zeitgeist in a really cool way that everybody's talking about it. And I think it's deserved that. I think it's going to get some big, big awards at the end of the year, and it deserves that as well. You would put it below Outer Wilds in your personal estimation, I'm hearing.
Outer Wilds, I would say, like the difference being that it's practically flawless. Like other than individuals not liking the controls of the rover.
This guy.
Other than Jeff and Christian being dum-dums, it's a perfect,
other than the skill issue, it's practically a perfect experience.
Man, I do feel bad about that because
as you
really, I really don't like piloting that spaceship. But, you know, to me, I will take like RNG frustrations just because like I'm so steeped in board game culture. Like this feels like it's completely of a board game mentality of like, you just didn't get that tile today, dude.
It feels like you could play this whole game, like not the whole game, but it feels like you could play a lot of the core of this game on a table and still have as good of a time. It's so
someone's making it right. Yeah. Like they're, that this game becoming the hit it has, somebody's spinning up the board.
It's a legacy. Oh, yeah. It's a legacy board game, right? Yeah. It is literally a legacy board game in digital form. So, you know, I would be not surprised that there would be a physical copy. If it continues this momentum that it's got and it makes lots and lots of money, maybe somebody will make that and I will buy it. But it's pretty rad. From my perspective, like I talked about this last week and I'll reiterate it again, just the moment to moment is to me as a person that loves that kind of board gamey stuff. I mean, I totally recognize that maybe not for everybody, but for me, just fun. It's just fun deciding which tile I'm going to pick. It's just fun trying to fit the little pieces together and make sure you have enough doors to go through that you don't end your day. And like,
even just the satisfaction of being like, I had at the end of that day, 150 steps.
Yeah.
I feel great about that. I can't use them, but I did that. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The accumulation of resources, the like, and none of that is the puzzly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's its own. I mean, I guess puzzle is the right word, but it's its own game. It is this parallel game that you're always playing that to me is always fun. So there's never like, well, I don't want to do another run. Even if the run ends in a frustrating way of, you know, of the RNG of like, oh, I have so many keys, so many gems and I can keep going, but I ran out of doorways, you know, or whatever it is. Like, I love the fact that I can start another run and it's still just as fun for me to just lay those tiles.
Here's the trust that I have in the game is right now it's very frustrating being like the RNG of it is going to make it impossible to try and get these two locations next to each other. That's the part that feels very frustrating. The trust I have in the game and the general polish of it all. And and this is the part where I'm like, it's a little bit tedious. I feel like I will get something that will make that task easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when, I don't know how. I feel like I have trust in this game that it will encourage that at some point.
Yes.
The frustrating part is to me, I'm like, I want that timeline to be a little bit shorter than the game wants to be.
Sometimes that can play out longer than you'd like, but it is interesting how it meets that stuff out to you, to the player, because it will introduce these pain points and then it will provide an item where it's like, oh, well that solves that.
Yeah.
I just need to make sure I get that item. You know,
I also feel like a good amount of my frustration is because Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, I mean, it trains you to be looking at everything in every corner and every space that you're in. So I feel like I was hyper prepared for blueprints where like some of the things that it might be like, did you notice this? And if I hadn't played a game where I was really actively trying to notice every detail, I might've been like, oh my gosh, I didn't even see that. But in this case, I was like, I've already memorized every corner of the room. Speed it up, baby. Get on my level.
That's funny. Anyway, it's a great game. And if you have Game Pass, I would highly recommend giving it a shot. Even if you're not into puzzle games, you know, I think the wonderful thing about it is that I think people think about puzzle games in a specific way. And this game kind of skirts the edge of that in that it, like I said, it always gives you something to do. Mm-hmm. And so you can sort of have fun on a certain level. You may get frustrated by how long things can go where you're not doing anything new. But if you just keep going, the game will just sort of populate new things for you to do. And it's pretty clever that way.
I think it's also free on PlayStation Plus.
PlayStation Plus Extra or one of the tiers for PlayStation. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
Christian, are you tempted by this one at all?
I am not. I was when I saw the buzz coming up about it and I knew that it was on Game Pass, but I have just accepted that RNG rogue type style games, even, you know, the best of them, it really is hard for me to not feel robbed in those moments where I know, like, if I keep playing, you'll get the thing and it will unlock. I just really don't enjoy that feeling of having the RNG not go my way. It's just not a game for me.
Yeah.
Lana, anything else on your playlist?
But the only other thing that is still floating in the wings of my place schedule is Monster Hunter Wilds. They had their DLC come out a couple weeks ago and really been having fun going in and do. I felt like the overall, the monsters in Monster Hunter Wilds, it felt like low rank started a lot lower. And one of the things I really like about Monster Hunter is like really is the challenge of you have to fight this monster this way in order to beat it, especially when you have co-op. And it feels like at least in this DLC, we're back in like the real challenge zone of fighting hard monsters, and it's tough, and it feels like a great triumph when you finally do. So
awesome.
It's great.
Digging it. Monster Hunter Wilds. Outer Hunter Wild.
Where does Wilds land for you, Lana, in the pantheon of hunting monsters? I think maybe we talked offline. Maybe it was on the show when it first came out, but weren't quite sold on parts of it. And I'm curious now if it's hooked its fangs all the way in you and it's like climbed higher tier list.
Yeah, I think it's really, really good. Really good. The biggest mark against it is there's no cats cooking food. And that, you know, usually a gimmick isn't usually the thing that keeps me in it. But something about those cats, I saw them. And in Monster Hunter World, when my Palico got knocked off the ship, I legit shed a tear. It was in 2 minutes of the game. I don't know why. It immediately imprinted on me or vice versa. Oh. And I just love those cats. And now none of them will cook me food. And I hate them for it. So that's probably the biggest thing. But overall, I have
bad news about real cats, Lana.
I've had a few. Tell me about it. Yeah.
Well, they're CG and Taylor Swift shows up and pretty long and not, they don't cook you food. They
haunted.
Don't,
haunted. They don't cook you food.
All right. Christian Spicer, you and I have a game that we share on our playlist. And I'd venture to say is real special game too. I think this is a indie game that, came out of nowhere for me, but man, I've been really enjoying. Tell me about your experience with Bionic Bay.
A game that was not on my radar until it came out to such high praise. And I guess there was an early demo. It was probably a Steam Next Fest demo. I don't know when it came out, or there was some version of it that you could have played earlier. And I did not, just was not on my radar. But for folks who know nothing about this game also, I would call it a platformer puzzler, where platforming is the more important part than the puzzling. It's not Fez, you know, it's not something like that where you're actually solving these really difficult, complex puzzles in order to progress. But it's also not Celeste, where it's pixel precision platforming required in order to pull off some of these moves. But you're kind of using powers and abilities that your character or characters unlock over the progression of the game. I haven't finished it. Steam says I'm 2.5 hours into Bionic Bay as of recording. And you get these abilities. It starts off, you can just kind of run and jump. Then you immediately get, you know, stronger or better run and jump. And so you're able to do a little bit more. And then it continues to open up. And I imagine it will open up even more. I'll speak vague. I don't know how far you are, Jeff, but like there are things that kind of keep building or switching or reinventing the status quo that are just absolutely incredible with how you progress through this world. It has kind of Limbo style
inside,
vibes.
Yeah, Limbo.
Atmospheric perspective where it's like
visually it's amazing, but I think you do it a disservice by saying running and jumping, because it's not, I think it's special already there. Like the abilities that you get are freaking awesome, but just the running and jumping part, it's not really running and jumping. It's flinging yourself. You're flinging your body at things. There was an old PlayStation downloadable game. What was that game called where you're like a crash test guy and you just fling your body at things? What the heck was that
like
game
one
called?
Of the first PSN games.
What was that called? Oh, it's right on the verge. I can see the image in my head of the title screen.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
Title.
I'll look it up.
Anyway,
keep going.
So this, the thing about Bionic Bay is that it's all modeled physics. So it's no canned animations, no, your guy is a little, you know, a little stick figure-y kind of looking dude. but and each body part moves independently, but you are subject to the same physics that the rest of the world is subject to.
And pain? So, was it just called pain?
Oh, maybe that's right. Maybe it was pain. Yeah. Anyway, so oftentimes what you're doing is flinging your body around this environment, rolling, leaping, casting yourself into imminent danger, which already I would say is really fun because it's this like grimy, goopy, icky, inky world. You know, you're going through pipes and you're falling in goop and it's just like it's icky, but you're also just flinging yourself off things and hoping you land and squeezing through tubes and stuff. So like it's already fun, and then as Christian was saying, they start adding abilities which are so cool, and the way it layers on those and keeps breaking your brain of like, oh, that means I get to do this. And that means that I can even fling myself more haphazardly at things. So go ahead, Christian.
The trailer showcases a bunch of the abilities. I know that not everybody watches trailers, so I don't know if we want to see any. But if you want to see little teasy pleasy on the Steam page, the trailer showcases.
There's some really cool things that you can do.
Enticing tidbits.
It's, I think there's a great chance this will be on my other five at the end of the year.
Same.
There's still so many games left for the year itself that I don't know if it will stay in the top five position. It's there now, but it has some of the appeal of something like Portal. So one of the first abilities you get is teleportation. And the way it uses that to open up what is this physics-based platforming that, again, isn't pixel-perfect precision because of the way that you're flying through the air, but it's not quite Sackboy level of floatiness. Like, you're able to control – you have pretty good control about where you're going to go, but just adding that little first wrinkle of teleportation and how that can further progress you, and then as they start adding other things into it that well, whatever. My brain's dumb. That shifts the gameplay. If you play it and you get far enough, you know I'm being literal, but I wasn't trying to. Is really fascinating and really fun. And some of the moments almost feel Astrobot-esque in that I've done some really incredible sequences that have only happened so far once. Again, I'm only 2.5 hours into the game. If I had to guess based on Steam achievements and the like, I would guess I'm about a quarter of the way through, maybe a third. I would guess this is supposedly about an 8-hour game.
This is okay. I've not finished it either, but it's supposedly 10 hours, which is long for a game like this.
And that's why I feel like if they keep introducing these new mechanics or these new things just for little bits, like this game already in my 2.5-hour playtime has one of the most thrilling, totally different perspective, so it's not the same thing, but one of the most thrilling Halo get off the planet style chase sequences of a game I've played in a really long time, where you have this thing pursuing you and you're using your powers and the things that the game's taught you so far to get through this thing, and it feels like you're getting there by, you know, the skin of your teeth, and it's so rewarding and so cool. And so what I think is really special about this game is the aesthetic. And Jeff, we talked about how HDR is, you know, maybe bigger than 4K in some ways. And this game on a great HDR screen with the lighting in the background. And there are some moments where you come across water and it's like pixely graphics. So it's not ray tracing, but it's like the crystal clear reflection of you and the world and the water below you with the bright light coming behind. Really, really, really cool. My only nit about the game so far, and I'm not sure how much of this is a nit versus just the intentional tug of the game, is that I think, and I'm curious your take, Jeff, but I think some of the, again, platforming puzzles, not puzzles, I think some of them can't be achieved your first try without luck. I think some of them are designed to require you to fail.
Just
to
like
learn it.
Just like Inside or Limbo, there's definitely a learn by dying element. I have no problem with that. because the way you die in this game is so fun, and how quickly you respawn and how frequent checkpoints are.
Very forgiving. Yes.
You almost never lose any major progress. And so, yeah, so like dying is part of it. And you die in spectacular ways in this. You know, your body explodes and flings, or you get squished by something, or, you know, it's the dying itself in the same way that Limbo and Inside did. The dying itself is kind of part of the fun. And so I that is not a gripe for me. It's more of like, it's a quality of these kinds of games where I didn't see that coming. I didn't know the floor was going to drop out when I landed on that one, or I didn't know that thing was going to explode. But this is the moment where I learned that things shaped like that explode, you know?
I think that quick reset is the thing that makes it almost more of an addictive thing, where you're like, okay, that was spectacular, but let me try again. And it becomes part of that loop. If it's like a long wipe and then you're back to whatever, I can see that being draining.
Yeah.
There was a moment, and I don't want to say this because I don't want to scare people off, but there was a very reminiscent for me of a Super Meat Boy or VVVVVVVVVV, whatever that, however many V's that game had in it, style gameplay, where I was using an ability I had plus some other stuff in the environment to really chain and hurl and shift things around in this like one fluid motion, all while, you know, meat grinders are trying to grind me as their future meat. And all of the things that you're able to do after you set up the catapult, you know, for lack of a better term, like you put this Rube Goldberg
machine
in motion, And then in there, you're also trying to build it. You're like, oh no, I'm missing a domino. And like, what ability can I do to make this? And then it lands, or it, you know, oftentimes it doesn't. But then when it lands, it's so satisfying to feel like you pulled it off again, because I think we talked about this a lot, Jeff, for Limbo, was how often it had you feeling like you just made it. You just escaped the wolves. And here it's like, you know, a hot iron press is coming down as a meat grinder is over here, and your ability only lasts for 7 seconds and you make it through in 6.9, you know, it's just, it nails that. I don't know what the hell's going on in the game plot wise.
It doesn't really matter.
There's some like
alien goop factory and it sucks.
It says uncover the mystery.
Yeah. I'm working on it. It's still a mystery. It's cool how it presents it. It shows you, like a portrait, like a really cool pixel art portrait. And then text comes on screen and it like plays with depth perception. And then I read about wandering lust through the woods of the world. And I'm like, I don't know what's happening. but I love it. Highly, highly, highly recommend Bionic Bay, which is still on sale. I think it's like 10% off right now as of
15
recording.
Bucks, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible. I was texting friends like, you need to play this game.
Really good. So did I. Yeah. It really,
oh,
really,
I didn't get, I must have missed the,
I said friends.
That's fine.
Blue bubbles only, Lana. Blue bubbles only.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Ouch.
I sent it out as an iMessage.
It's like that.
To everybody I.
You're not on that text chain.
Hold on.
You Lana. Can't
now.
It's too late.
Too late.
As if you can live message me. Listen, right now. Oh, I've been meaning to tell you, by the way.
In his defense, he did not know you were going to be on the episode until like 5 minutes before.
Oh, sorry. I mean, your other friends were going to be on the episode.
Yeah. So
right.
When I wrote out saying that I texted all my friends about it, it was one of our friends that was going to be on the show. So.
Yeah, Bionic Bay again is what it's called. We are in a sea of great things that I can heartily recommend to people to play right now, but here's another one for the pile. Like, this is I feel like we're in this crazy glut of excellent games, but Bionic Bay should not be ignored. It's really good. It's really fun. So there you go.
Yeah, Lana.
All right.
There's your recommendation.
Sorry. I mean, thank you, sir.
We're going to take one more break for sponsors. We'll be right back right after this. All right. I want to do a quick tabletop time because Lana's here. It's fun. Why not? Let's do it. Right now. Lana Bashinsky, my understanding is that you are in some sort of monk-like training montage for Survivor, that you're doing the gonna fly now, you're chasing chickens, I don't know what's happening. There's some sort of,
that's just a screening of Minecraft when she's chasing chickens.
Yeah, it consumes my every waking thought. So for those of you who might not catch the Wednesday show, your girl love Survivor. Yes, that Survivor, hosted by Jeff Probst on Paramount Plus, by the way, not my parting gift, but you should definitely watch this season. It's excellent. But basically at every different sort of turn, I'm like so friggin' serious about being on this show that I'm like, my trainer is like changing workouts so that they'll emulate challenges. So I'm doing specific
14 coconut reps.
It's so much like holding heavy things over my head and like jumping around the gym. And everybody's like, this psycho lady, is she doing something? But one of the things that Jeff Bodine did for me was for my birthday, he bought me puzzles and he took away the boxes and all of the images having to do with the puzzle. Whoa. And he'll just put it on the table for me to go practice doing a puzzle. So it's like
won't serve dinner until you finished it.
Put the image together. Like it says, what is this? An Edwardian lady's diary? He's like, it's the puzzle that was at the store. You know.
RNG, so, I wiped the board. Start again.
So it's very, my tabletop time is so silly in that I'm like trying to remember. Like, I feel like I've played board games, but I can't remember what. But I've definitely been doing puzzles, which I don't know. I love puzzles in games, but there is
like jigsaw puzzles is what you're talking
about. Like a jigsaw puzzle. Just a 1,000-piece puzzle, baby.
You're handcuffed in a dirty bathroom and you can't leave.
Just like on the show.
You kill somebody. A classic jigsaw puzzle.
Never seen Survivor. Yeah. Somebody told Christian it was Survivor and they just played all the Jigsaw movies in a row.
Yeah, isn't that how it works? You just end up mask over your head on a beautiful island. Yeah.
What I meant to say is, when I want to be on the show, is that I'm hungry for murder.
So you recommend doing it this way, where you take the puzzle and you get rid of any kind of help?
Guide rails? I do. I don't know. I feel like I genuinely feel like it's a skill that I get better at, of like looking at shapes and colors versus trying to like
sadomasochistic puzzle solving.
But it's also, work is very stressful. I can be high anxiety and I can't believe how quickly my brain like turns off everything else. And I could just sit there for an hour and like do a corner of a puzzle and be like, oh, that was, did I experience peace in my heart and my soul? So if you haven't done a puzzle, I know I sound like, you know, I'm talking about my youth. I do puzzles in my free time, but I really do recommend.
I love a puzzle. I haven't done, my daughter does them, but they're, you know, exceedingly simplistic for an adult person to do. Mm-hmm. So I have done many puzzles recently, but not many that I would consider to be, you know, overtly adult challenging. Mm-hmm. I used to love them when I was younger and I had time to do those things. Mm-hmm. I have a fondness is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
For that process.
Lana builds her Lego. Her husband buys it, dumps them out, throws the instructions away, hides a couple of bricks in other rooms and says, build it. What, did you just get a text mid-show, Lana?
I got a text. Sorry, I'm so rude.
Somebody said, you should really play Bionic Bay.
It's from Christian Spicer saying that. That's exactly what it is. Hilarious. I guess I'll check it out. Thanks for the rec.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I feel so valued.
Well, since we're doing puzzles of all kinds this week, it really feels like, you know, even Bionic Bay had puzzles, Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, Blue Prince.
Talking the Warriors puzzles, beat the puzzles. Rockets.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they won.
Starting well.
Boo.
Anyway, I will talk about a game that has taken over my house lately on the tabletop. We've been playing lots of board games lately. But one I highly recommend. Have either of you guys played 5-Minute Mysteries or know of it?
No.
Is it the same series as 5-Minute
every Dungeon?
We've done a bunch of 5 minutes, but I have not done Mysteries yet.
5-Minute Abs. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. 4-Minute Abs. Same great abs, one less minute.
5-Minute Dungeons is, and they have one other one. I can't remember what it is, but I'd never played 5-Minute Mysteries, and it's awesome. Great for kids. But one of those beautiful, wonderful games where it's just as fun for an adult to play with the kid. You're not, you know, it's not dumbed down. And the way it works is it comes with this really lovely, chunky piece of plastic that they call, what do they call it? Oh, shoot. It's got a really cool name. Dang it. What's that? What do they call this thing? It's like a key for a puzzle, but it has a fun name. Anyway, it's it is a series of symbols that you are going to be looking for. So the idea here is it's like kind of like
cipher?
Clue. A cipher? Yeah, I think there's a different
MacGuffin?
Word.
MacGuffin?
I was thinking MacGuffin too.
Cipher might be it, but I think there's a different word that I'm trying to think of. Anyway, point is, it's like Clue. Somebody has done a crime. Is stolen. It, 5-Minute Mysteries, it's all thieving from this museum. So it's very kid-friendly. There's no murder. It's all thieving from, you know, burglaring a museum. And it's all these anthropomorphized animals. There's rabbit people and hippo people and all manner of in between. And so you have a series of suspects. And you split up these cards that have the suspect's picture on them between all the players so that all the suspects are accounted for in someone's hand. And one of them is the culprit. And it has this really clever mechanism whereby the culprit card, the back of the culprit card, so you don't know who the culprit is, has a series of sort of color-coded keys on each side of the square of its token that will match up to clues. So there's four different categories of clue. You will flip over the clue when you earn one and try to match it to the side of the culprit card by lining up this kind of color-coded barcode thing. And if it lines up perfectly, it means that clue applies to this culprit. And even if it doesn't apply, you're narrowing down information. So for example, you may find out that they are holding an umbrella. So the umbrella is the clue. You've unlocked this umbrella clue and you line it up and you see, oh, it does not apply to this culprit. So that gives you information. That means anybody that is holding an umbrella is not the person who done it. So you can take all those suspect cards out of your hand and discard them because you're trying to narrow down who actually did this crime. So you're trying to get as many of those clues as you can. If you can line up all four of them, you know exactly who it is because there's only four traits that would that apply. And if you get exactly who it is, you'll know. But you can still narrow it down by getting, you know, false positives as well. False positive is the wrong term, but you get my drift. Mm-hmm. So how do you earn the clues? That is a very cool part of this game. That is really what you're doing is – they have a bunch of scenes, drawn scenes of places in the museum. And they're very highly detailed. And hidden in those scenes are five different shapes. I think five or six different shapes. There's going to be a circle shape, a triangle shape, a plus sign, a square, and a star. So it is five. And but the manner of those shapes, they have... there's different variations of those shapes. And so one person is holding this cipher thing that has rotating dials along for each of those shapes that have the different variations that are possible of each shape. And you're trying to line up, dial in the correct variation. So it'll be like a circle that has like little dots around it or a triangle that has another triangle inside it, or a star that has a circle around it. So there's like these different variations, and one person's holding that cipher and trying to dial those in. Everybody else is looking at the scene, trying to find the symbols in the scene and calling it out to that person, like, oh, I found the star. It has a circle around it. It's like, oh, okay, cool. And they dial it in. Once you have all of the shapes dialed in appropriate to the scene, you flip the scene over. It shows you the correct readout that should be on your cipher. And if it matches up, you get a clue. And then you flip that clue over and you try to line it up. You're doing this in a time limit. So it's 5-minute mysteries. Many of them are 5 minutes. Some are 7 minutes. Some are eight. Based on the difficulty, they'll be, you know, kind of around that time frame. But there's an app, a free app you can download that's themed around 5-minute mysteries and has the correct time case by case. But you can use any timekeeping device. But you're trying to get as many clues as you can in that time period to narrow down the suspects and figure out who done it. It's wacky and wild because it's a cooperative game. Everybody's trying to figure it out at the same time. You're all helping each other. Oh, I found this. Oh, I found this. Oh, okay. Which category of clue should we use that we just unlocked one clue? We get to pick one, flip it over. Oh, we found out they have a monocle. Okay, everybody look in your hand. Find all the suspects that have monocles. Now we've narrowed it down to 4 or 5. Okay, cool. Let's get another one. Really fun, manic, frantic, but just a blast. And they do some really smart things. One of which is, you would think if you go through all the different scene cards enough times, you'd sort of remember where the symbols are in those scenes and it would kind of lose the challenge, right? Well, very smartly, they have, I don't know, 5 or 6, maybe more, different scenes that repeat in the deck of potential scenes. And the positioning of all of the symbols that you need to find are different on those repeated ones. So you can't memorize because, oh, I remember the scene. It's an aquarium. Oh, the circle was over here. Well, it could be the same aquarium scene, but the circle is now in a different location. So it has multiple different scenes, but all of the scenes repeat, but the positioning is changed. So it really is a clever way to add replayability because you'll never lock in your head, oh, it was there in this particular scene, because maybe it isn't this time you see that scene. Very smart, very fun, easy for kids to do as well, participatory for everybody because somebody gets to be the cool person that operates the fun, you know, plastic object. Everybody else is leaning over and yelling out stuff and trying to help, and it's awesome. And there's different cards with different cases that have variations. Sometimes you have to find two culprits, or sometimes there's like different handicaps that'll make it harder for you to find things, or easier. So they're ranked in the difficulty levels, and it's just such a smart game. So much fun. Way better than Clue or Cluedo, which is a game that I, you know, enjoyed playing as a kid, but like it just completely replaces that game. I think everything that you get out of Clue, if you like that game, is done here faster, better, more interesting, more flavor, more fun. I highly recommend it. And again, I'm playing it with a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and they just absolutely love it. So it's called 5-Minute Mysteries. Big, big recommend from me.
Have we talked about, I feel like we have, but I don't remember. Have we talked about Spy Alley on this show?
I don't know. I don't recall if we have.
I might save it then for another tabletop time, but I will just throw it up here as another game that kind of scratches that Clue itch that is great to play with kids and can leave in someone in a very frustrated state of being. But the other side of that coin is you're at a very elated state of being if you are the one who gets to frustrate the other person. So a little tease. I'll talk about Spy Alley then on another show.
You know, I'm sure a lot of people have played Guess Who. My kids have Guess Who. This, you know, 5-Minute Mysteries also utilizes some aspects of Guess Who. My favorite thing about it, though, is that because it's all anthropomorphized animals, you're not getting into, you know, traits of a person. You know, it's all like, oh, do they have scales? You know, mm-hmm. do they have a crazy top hat with a flower on it? You know, like, it's not, you know, you're not dealing with identity politics with little kids. You know what I mean? It's there's so many things that are smart about 5-minute mysteries. Huge recommend for me. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Lana Bashinsky, you're always awesome. You're so wonderful to have leapt in right here at the last minute, and we are grateful for it. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff that you do in the world.
Well, the number one way you can keep up with me is the DLC Wednesday show, baby, every Wednesday with these two folks over on the Patreon. And then I also, of course, do the book club with Jeff every Thursday over on YouTube, and that's a great time. But if you want to get in touch with me personally, hang out with me on the interwebs, you can basically find me on whatever website, though I prefer Blue Sky, at Latinie. That's LATIENIE. I also do Twitch streaming with the Riot Animation team, or as we call ourselves, the RAT, at RAT Animators on Twitch. We're hoping to ramp up the number of streams that we do this year, so we'll be doing a bunch of that. So if you are interested in talking about animation and video games and where those two things intersect, then you should hang on out with the RAT Animators on Twitch.
I, you know, perhaps don't talk enough about the book club. Atlanta and I love doing the book club so much. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe difficult to get people to leap in, especially now that we're on like book 8 of a 10 book series. And these books are not small. They're all over 1,000 pages and, like, you know, crazy dense. But let me tell you, folks, these are some of the best books I've ever read in my life. And doing it alongside Lana has been such a joy and so much fun. And the community that we have for the show is small but passionate. It is so much fun. If you are at all tempted to read a fantasy series that, yes, the first book is the worst of the 10. It can be off-putting. It's also the shortest. It's, you know, these are dense, crazy books, but they're funny. They're fun. They're poignant. They're powerful. And like I said, I feel like these are the best books I've ever read.
It's certainly one of, if not the best reading experiences I've had. I was very nervous to do any kind of book club style thing, as Jeff will remember, because I was very afraid. I'm like, oh, we're going to start talking about adjectives. Or like, I don't know. I'm not like very linguistically. I read a lot, but I wouldn't call myself, ooh, well read. You know, I was really worried about my ability to sort of even speak about the books afterwards, other than being like, I don't know, seem good. But it has been a delight. And I think even the way that we read them, which was kind of happenstance because we didn't know any better, where our first episode, we powered through the first half of the first book. I have no regrets about doing that way, because I think it takes about that long for it to start coming into focus into what could possibly be cool about the book. So if you're nervous at all, I know it kind of sounds like one of those things that's like, oh my God, it gets so good after the 10th season. But it's not like that. I think it goes by quite quickly. And I genuinely think our commentary and talking about the things that we're confused about, it feels so self-congratulatory. I think we did a really good job talking about it. But I genuinely think that it has been such a good time. It has been so meaningful, so fulfilling to me, and having you to talk things out with and sort of ring out different scenes and see our thoughts are oftentimes our deep feelings about things.
I mean, the number of times we've cried on the show is not a low number.
Yeah. But and of course we always start with a non-spoiler topic. So I don't know, it has been a joy for me. And if you are all into books or looking for something new, a new experience to get into, come hang out with us, leave comments and chat with us. And we have a whole fun Discord section on the DLC Discord as well. So it's really great.
Yeah. And if you're a patron at patreon.com/DLC pod, you get the audio version at any level of being a patron. And the video version is on my YouTube page, which is youtube.com/KanataJeff. All right, Christian Spicer, what you got going on this week?
I owe people replies that sent me replies to my newsletter, which you can find at christianspicer.substack.com. I am behind. I apologize for that. I will get them out. I'm also working on my next newsletter, which I think I was still toying with last week, but it's this idea of why I rarely replay my favorite games, but have beat games that aren't my favorite multiple times. It's a, I don't know. I think I've maybe diagnosed the problem, but that's what this newsletter is going to be about. Again, you can find that for free at christianspicer.substack.com. And then Jeff, as you mentioned, Alex and I are starting the discussion for season 4 of Feeling This. We have yet to start, but we have some exciting topics and it's just been hectic. I mean, today is Easter night as we are recording this, and finding time is always difficult, but Alex and I are excited to get back to that. So folks can find all of the first 3 seasons over on the Patreon, and season 4 is coming in hopefully sooner than later.
Exciting stuff. Looking forward to that. You can follow me on socials. I'm at Jeff Kanata. Really the only social I'm on anymore is Blue Sky, but hopefully you're hanging out over there as well. And I do the film cast and We Have Concerns as other shows alongside the book club. Also want to say thanks to all the folks that have donated so far to my fundraising efforts for Providence Cancer Institute. You can check that out at runjeffrun.com. We're still inching toward my goal of $20,000 raised for cancer research. I'm hoping folks continue to find value in that. Runjeffrun.com is where you can donate. No amount is too small. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Lana Bashinsky, what would you like to suggest help people get through their week?
As I sort of teased earlier in the show, lots of Star Wars content, Clone Wars universe. If you have not checked out the Clone Wars, the animated series, and very specifically the Bad Batch animated series, both are on Disney Plus, they are excellent. They're both of them. I think the Clone Wars last couple seasons is some of my favorite Star Wars content, Star Wars stories of all time. I think a lot of people, I mean, it's an animated show. There's definitely episodes that are a little bit more like for kids. But if you've got kids, great introduction into the universe if they haven't already been there. I think because of the animation style, the art direction that they chose back in the day, like visually it all holds up super, super well. You can tell that some of it was like really pushing some of the earliest days of CG in the first couple seasons. The last season of Clone Wars is just beautiful. And the Bad Batch animated series, it doesn't even show up. There's like such a myriad of different Star Wars animated things on the front page of Disney Plus. I don't know why Bad Batch doesn't make the cut. It is great. Like all ages, adult, enjoyable time. It feels so silly on the surface because you're like, okay, this dude with half a skull tattooed on his face is supposed to be like this cool, sympathetic character. It's just like literally judging the show by its cover has a bit of silliness to it. But the voice acting is incredible. The characters are great. The story is wonderful. I think there are 3 seasons, 4 seasons now. Bad Batch is so, so, so good. Highly recommended.
All right. I may have to check that out. I've never seen it. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Comic book related parting gift. Batman Hush 2 is Hush happening 2? Right now. Hush 2. Hush Still to hushed. You too. Still hushed. I kind of made fun of Shush, who was featured in Batman, current run of Batman and Robin, trained by Hush or inspired by Hush, female Hush, Shush. I mean, it is kind of silly. But Hush 2.
The should have went with Sheesh.
Sheesh. Oh, sheesh. The first Hush was, I think, a mini. And maybe it was just a trade. But it was not in the main continuum of Batman comics. It was Jim Lee basically drawing every Batman rogue ever. You know, all the villains, the Rogues Gallery, just incredible art, came up with this story that the story's fine, and certainly they've made the character a more important part of the Batman legacy. But at the time it happened, it existed. It was canon, but it existed outside the mainline continuity. Hush 2 is happening in the mainline Batman comic continuity right now. It is happening in Batman, the comic line just called Batman. It started, I think, 2 weeks ago. I have it, but it's just far enough that I can't grab it. And Batman number 158. 159 continues, I think it's this week. I think it's the 23rd it comes out. And it basically concludes this run of Batman until they relaunch Batman this summer. Comics do this all the time with a new number one and debuting a new suit. The reason why I'm recommending Batman Hush 2, this storyline happening in Batman right now, is one, it's happening in the main continuity, which I think is interesting for what it could mean for the character. Yes, they do a number reboot a few months from now, so this gives them a chance to do a clean slate again. But I think it's interesting that they're bringing this character into the mainline continuity for now. And two, I don't know, I mean, he's not super old, but how often do you get to have Jim Lee do a run like this again? I feel like having these greats draw all these characters and be involved in these stories, you know, it is the, there are great new artists coming up, certainly, and new writers, but there is an era now of these artists that we grew up with, Jeff, the Claremonts, yeah, who's doing another run of Wolverine and Kitty Pryde, that folks, a mini that they can look out for also. But having Jim Lee do this again, I think, is very special. And I'm not sure where the story goes for Hush 2, but the things that happened in the first issue of it in 158, if hold, could be massive shifts for what Batman and Gotham means and represents. I'm sure they'll retcon it at some point, but right now in this mainline continuity, I think they're taking a big swing, and you can still get that issue in stands now. They've done reprints of it, and you can jump on board with Hush 2, issue 2, which is Batman 159. Welcome to comics, and be along for the ride. It's really fun. Check it out.
I think I'd have to say, for me and my comic book reading life, I think Jim Lee is my favorite artist of all time. I think what his line drawing is my comic book light. Like that, I mean, there's other contenders to that throne, I think, but I think I'd have to put him number one. I really do.
It really is iconic and defined comics, I think, for so many people that think of them now, because even so much of the MCU that came after him doing Marvel, and even though he didn't do a lot of those characters, I feel like was defined by his line work and his pencils. And there are certainly those other iconic eras of giant size X-Men number one and what those initial drawings of those characters look like. But
I mean, there are people that are, you know, John Romita Jr. and, you know, the list goes on and on and on for me that were impactful. I just think like the early 90s, when I was at my peak of, like, he was everything. And I don't know. Anyway.
And still is.
Conversation.
Hush 2 is incredible. Hush 2, I mean, it's not as if he's slacking. Like, the art is still phenomenal, the work he's doing.
Awesome. All right. My parting gift is a new movie that hit theaters this weekend. It's called Sinners. Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan, and Michael B. Jordan. This one I highly recommend. This is a very hard R movie. Don't take the kids, but if you're an adult and you're into some, you're up for some intense, violent fun, I would try to avoid spoilers. There's a lot. I didn't know anything about this movie when I went and saw it, and I really was glad about that, because it takes a turn that I think is spoiled by the trailers. But if you can avoid it, I think even if you are spoiled, it's worth seeing this movie. It's real good and real fun and crazy and beautifully shot. Well worth going to see Sinners in theaters. See it on a big screen. I saw it in IMAX. It's worth seeing it on a big old screen. This is big fun cinema, baby. Check it out. All right, this is a suggested parting gift. Comes to us from Sean, who says, for my parting gift, I have a music recommendation for 8-Bit Big Band. as the name suggests, it's a jazz big band that does renditions of game themes going back from the classic Nintendo days to modern games. My wife bought us tickets to see them perform in Philadelphia, and I was blown away by the musicianship of these talented artists. While all their arrangements were great, my favorite may be Still Alive from Portal in the style of Frank Sinatra. Their albums are on Spotify, but if you get a chance, seeing them live is a real treat. All the best, Sean. I had not heard of this this 8-bit big band. I checked it out on YouTube. It's real fun. I mean, it's what the name suggests. It's 8-bit music done as a big band, which is wild. Very fun. Thank you, Sean, for sending that in. If you'd like to have your parting gift right on our show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Lena Bashinsky and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get merch for our show by visiting our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. We do have to thank our biggest thanks, of course. They go to our patrons. Our patrons make this show possible. Thank you, patrons. Thank you. We really appreciate you, especially in these trying times. If you'd like to become a patron and ensure this show continues, give value for where you get value, it would be very much appreciated. Patreon.com/DLCpod. All right. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.